Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios at 303 East Wacker. Thanks so much for hanging out with us in the middle of the night, everybody. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Jump in if you want. Jumping in on the phone right now is our buddy Chris Williamson, the head of the Searching for Earhart podcast and documentary film that's coming out pretty soon. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Hey, Matt, how's it going? Good to be back with you.
Yeah, it's good to chat with you. It's been a long time. We have not found Amelia yet. We would have talked to you sooner, but we're still working
not yet.
On that. And you've got, we've talked many times over the last few years, you've been working on a documentary, and I understand there's Amelia Earhart Festival going on coming up this week, and we're going to be premiering the trailer for the first time. Is that true?
Yeah, you know, this is it. We've arrived. I know, as you mentioned, we've been talking off and on for actually last year. We were actually in this position right before the Amelia Earhart Festival, and we were going to be out there shooting a lot of different folks for the documentary. And now we are here a year later in Atchison, about a week out from the festival, and we are premiering, or world premiering, our trailer for it. So it's been an exciting, you know, past 365 days for us.
Why is the festival in Atchison, Kansas? Is that her birthplace?
Yeah, so that's her birthplace. She, you know, she was born and raised in Atchison, Kansas. She's sort of kind of Atchison's girl, and then every year they put on this festival. This is the 22nd annual one, and it's kind of a gathering spot for Amelia Earhart, sort of experts and fans and people alike. And we like to say it's sort of Mecca for Amelia Earhart because they have so much stuff going on in Atchison for this particular event, and especially this year. This is going to be the biggest year they've ever had in the last 22 years because of all the people that we have coming in.
Very cool. Okay, let's go through a couple of, let's do some myth busting right now, see where we're at with the whole Amelia research. I was just looking up your podcast, and I found a story from USA Today from a year ago, and the headline was, Bone-Sniffing Dogs Will Search for Amelia Earhart's Remains on Remote Island. Whatever happened with that? Did they go? Did they search and they find nothing?
So they actually did go. National Geographic tagged along. This is, you're referring to the Tiger Group, which is the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery. They've been working the island of Nikumaroro now for a little over 30 years. And this was their latest expedition this last summer out to the island. And they did bring the dogs. They did search several sections of the island, one specific section that's known as the Seven Site, which is what they've been kind of excavating off and on for the last several trips now. And the bones, the bone-sniffing dogs, the forensic canines actually did alert to some areas where they indicated that there were remains of bodies that were buried in those specific areas. So they did actually alert to those areas as far as where those bodies, Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan, that's still sort of being worked out with, along with some of the soil samples that they actually been taken from the island. They're actually in the lab right now, and they've been actually working on a lot of lab work for the last year. So those dogs, they did bring them out. It was kind of a new form of technology for Tiger to work out. And it was, according to them, very successful. They did, you know, they did alert to spots where Tiger had indicated that there were bodies. So it's kind of just one of those things where the dogs themselves were just kind of a further confirmation on some of Tiger's work and on an island off and on for the last 30 years. And now it's kind of morphed into a lab setting for them. So now they've got all their samples, all of their information that they've gathered, not only on that particular trip, but other subsequent trips. And now they're kind of working out stuff in lab before they go back to the island. So that's really all we know at this point. They did alert to certain areas. They did alert to areas that they thought they'd find some stuff. And that's kind of where we stand with Tiger right now. So they're putting out a lot of different things. They've been really busy over the last year between that and the Dr. Richard Jantz report that came out and kind of, again, set the world on fire like it tends to do with Earhart stuff. So it's been busy. It's been a busy year for Tiger.
All right, let's get back to that report in a second. But when they say bodies were buried here, does that make sense to you for that to even be part of Amelia? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but the theory of this island is they crashed there or landed there because it was something they could land on, then would have been deserted there for as long as they were able to survive. So there wouldn't have been any burying of bodies most likely there, correct?
Yeah, so really it's just sort of, you know, building a case for them. You know, Tiger has sort of built a case of circumstantial evidence over the course of the last 30 years. So building a case is like building a house, and that's kind of what they've been doing for the last 30 years, brick by brick, they've been building this case. And there were no bodies buried there that we know of, especially when it comes to Amelia and Fred. The idea there is that they, you know, they landed, as you said, on that island. They survived for a time. They tried to send out radio distress calls, and they eventually succumbed, whether it is, you know, whether it was because of lack of water or lack of food or just, you know, whatever the case was, they essentially succumbed to the island castaway life. And that's kind of where they ended up. And there's been a lot of sort of rumor and innuendo as on, you know, regarding, you know, how they were disposed of. Were they eaten by crabs, the remains? Were they, you know, was it just kind of one of the things that they just dissipated over time? We don't really know, but they have a lot of interesting aspects of when it comes to areas of the island that they think they might have camped out at and might have, you know, survived for a time at. And that's where they think they maybe would have succumbed eventually, maybe most likely to water, a lack of water, I should say. And that's where the dogs, you know, alerted to in those general areas. You know, they had a couple of hot spots that they thought, well, maybe this could have been, you know, where a body was. And sure enough, the dogs have indicated that there was a body there at one point. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, clue, or an interesting really kind of notch in their belt. But it's really just a notch in their belt. It's nothing hard. Hardcore, yeah. More circumstantial evidence, really.
And for
evidence nonetheless.
For people that aren't as familiar with the story, you're thinking, well, if the plane landed there, where's the plane? But the theory sure. is that this is a little atoll that kind of gets covered by water at times, and where they would have landed, eventually the water would have sucked that plane out to sea, and it would have floated away or sank and kind of rolled down in the sea, right?
Correct, yeah, that it basically broke up and rolled down, you know, it kind of lays off the shores of Nicomoro Island at some point, and it could have been carried out to sea a little ways, but yeah, they've also done a lot of underwater searches. It's sort of really interesting to see how much underwater search plays into the varying hypotheses and the disappearance, and of course, whether it's out in, you know, in deep sea off the shores of Howland, 18,000 plus feet down, or whether it's off the shores of Nicomoro. Yeah, that's one of those aspects that they think it might have broke up and just kind of fell over the atoll and just went underwater. And it's not, most likely, if it's in that position in that area, it is not intact. Whereas if you look at the crash and sink hypothesis, which is what's, you know, sort of supported by the U.S. government at this point, that the plane might relatively be intact due to the state of the water and the underwater environment, it could very well be intact at the bottom of the ocean. So one, broken up, two, maybe intact, depending on where you go.
Okay, the two things that I recall in the last year that have come out that have made headlines a little bit. One is, we know that bones were found on the island, right, many years ago, like in the 40s, right?
Right, and, 1940, correct.
And the bones have since disappeared, but measurements were taken. And at the time, they were dismissed as being Amelia Earhart's bones because of the length of, what was it, the bone that goes from our elbow to our wrist, or what bone were they measuring?
Yeah, they were essentially, you know, they were dismissed as being any, you know, female bones of any kind of nature because of the length of some of the bones, based off of the, you know, the actual size of people at the time. They were basically always thought to be that of a man, of Eastern, you know, an Eastern Islander descent or something along the lines of that. And so it was essentially what happens, and I'll kind of give you a little bit of exposition. Back in 1940, there is a medical doctor, his name is D.W. Hoodless, very competent medical doctor that, you know, gets to put a full-blown analysis on these bones, and he gets to examine them, and he's determined that these bones are, in fact, that of a male. And fast forward to 2018, and you have a gentleman by the name of Dr. Richard Jantz, who is one of the foremost authorities on the planet when it comes to forensic anthropology. He actually looks at D.W. Hoodless's original report, looks at photographs of the bones, and looks at his notes, and looks at a lot of other options. And he indicates that, no, that these bones were that, in fact, of a woman. And, in fact, he believes that that woman happened to be Amelia Earhart. And in his report, which is extremely technical, just to get through the abstract, it's very difficult to do. But when you look at his report, the long and short of it is that he concludes with a resounding 99.9% that those bones match that of Amelia Earhart. And, you know, we recently had him on the show. We talked for about 90 minutes and broke that report down from, you know, line by line, essentially went through it. And he stands by in that, you know, that report. He believes that, it, you know, until somebody else falsifies his hypothesis, he believes that those bones were, in fact, Amelia's. And, of course, as, you know, things tend to happen in the Amelia Earhart case, they competing camps, of course, you know, took right after that and started trying to poke holes in his hypothesis and you know, explain why they're not Amelia Earhart's bones, in fact. And, you know, it's just been kind of an interesting, you know, back and forth between all the different camps in the last 6 months or so. It's been really interesting to see kind of how the pendulum swings from one side to another.
Sure, but when he says he's 99% sure, that's not scientifically sure. That's his theory or his belief, right? Because, I mean, he has a picture with a measurement. He doesn't have any DNA. He can't even say 100% for sure it's a female bone, can he?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, when he uses, you know, when he compares them to, a control group of, I think the number of the control group is around 2,000. That's kind of where he got his 99% number. And he doesn't have any DNA evidence to support it. It's nothing, you know, nothing concrete to that nature. But he does believe, and it really is, yeah, it is his opinion. But it's an opinion of somebody who is really considered, you know, world-renowned in his field. So this isn't just a nobody. This is a guy that, you know, you would call for something like this, for a case of this stature. And it's interesting to note that when we were scripting the interview for him and actually, you know, pulling down notes and kind of coming up with this interview I was going to talk with him about, we had a couple of masters, PhDs actually were helping me actually script the interview. And what's interesting about that is that when I first started talking to them, they were kind of taken aback because they had told me that this guy is, you know, we learned about him. We studied him in our master's program. This guy was the guy. He's the guy. So to have somebody of that stature say, no, I believe this is with 99% certainty that this is, in fact, the bones of Amelia Earhart, it's, you know, it puts a lot of weight behind that. It's somebody, it's like bringing a star witness in, you know, for a defense or prosecution that just kind of crushes it for that particular team and says, you know, gives them the scientific evidence. With or without DNA, there's other ways to kind of, you know, narrow stuff down. And then that's what he's done. He's used a lot of technology to narrow stuff down. And really the question then becomes, do you really believe someone like that, someone with that stature that does not have the bones, the actual physical specimens to look at? Or do you believe the doctor, the medical doctor, who was very competent back in 1940, who actually looked at the bones and indicated that these are that of a man? So it really comes down to what you believe, who you believe, and who you think had the, more competency to determine, you know, to determine what bones those were and who they belong to. So it's sort of an interesting kind of workaround.
Well, the other big thing that was about a year ago was the big documentary. Was it the History Channel or was it National Geographic?
It was History Channel. Yeah, you're referring to the lost evidence probably, right?
So they had that, and with the photograph that supposedly showed Fred Noonan and Amelia possibly having been captured, not on the island of Nicomore, somewhere else, with the possibility of the plane being towed in the background. And so if that really happened, then there wouldn't have been bones on that island, unless something happens where they get sent back there to die, or who knows what happens. But this photo comes out, and it's this big, huge new piece of evidence. And then like a week later, a couple days later, a guy's like, no, that photo's in a book here that predates when they're saying this happened. Where are we at with that?
So the folks that worked on the Lost Evidence Project, they came out with that photo. Again, a little exposition. The photo drops about a week in advance. Actually drops during the anniversary of the disappearance, which is really kind of interesting. And so the photo drops, sets the whole world on fire. The documentary comes out, and it's the highest rated documentary show ever. Of that year, rather, by far. And Japanese blogger. After the documentary comes out, which was interesting timing, to wait to that point, since the photo had been out in the media for about a week or so before, decides to do a little Googling and do a little searching on that. And he finds in the Japanese archives that this photo is in fact a photo of a Japanese travelogue book. And it was actually taken in 1935, which would make it a physical impossibility for it to be Earhart and Noonan. Now, since that happened, the History Channel sort of put out a Band-Aid, sort of put out a press release and said, we're going to investigate it, independently, and we're going to get back with you. They never got back with anybody. So they did an investigation, apparently internally, but we don't know the results of that. We're still not privy to that. However, the gentleman who ran the Lost Evidence Project, Dick Spink and Les Kinney, actually went back to Marshall Islands to do further research on it, and they stand behind that photograph 1,000%, that is in fact Earhart and Noonan. Not only that, but that is the Lockheed Electra being towed on the barge. behind them, and they actually, Dick is actually coming to Atchison, Kansas in less than a week to present new information and new findings, and unfortunately we're not privy to those new findings yet. He wants to save that for the discussion panel that we're going to have on a larger platform of Earhart enthusiasts that'll be kind of listening and watching along as that discussion panel unfolds. But that's kind of where we're at. They stand behind it. They've done further research. There's actually a second documentary planned. I don't know if it's with the History Channel or not, but I do know that there's a second documentary. I know that they shot about 4 hours of footage for that initial documentary, and only 2 hours made the cut. So they have a lot more. And they say, especially when you see the actual photo, the original photo that was found in the archives, and you look at that in person, that you'll be sold that is, in fact, her and Noonan. So,
well, what is the Japanese,
stay tuned for more.
What has the blogger said since then, and has anybody found this actual book or any proof of a book having this photo?
There has not been any proof of this book finding the photo, and the blogger has gone dark. There is not any kind of, you know, the blogger hadn't done any interviews or anything. Even when the photo broke and the blogger came out, there was not really a lot on the blogger themselves. We spoke with the blogger through an interpreter and kind of talked to him and you know, basically told us the same thing he told everybody else. It only took him about 35 minutes to find the photo. It wasn't that long. And then once he found it, he just basically put his findings out there and said, hey, this isn't what you guys think it is. And it hurt. It definitely hurt a lot, I can tell you that. But if you're looking at an entire case, the Japanese capture hypothesis itself is the oldest one out there. It's been around since 1960 when it was pioneered by Fred Gerner a very, very long time ago. And, you know, it's the same thing if you look at a jury trial case or something and there's a piece of evidence that, you know, you can't use or gets thrown out. It throws out that piece of evidence, but it doesn't throw out the whole case. And that's how they're kind of standing behind it. Even if that photo is determined to be 1,000%, you know, inaccurate, that's just one piece in their puzzle and they have so much more to go on. So it's one of those things where, again, they're standing behind it. Blogger's gone dark. They've got some more evidence and we're just all waiting to see what happens.
So I've asked you this before, Chris, and refresh my memory. You believe, so
sure.
So that photo was found in archives or was it recently declassified stuff? How was that photo suddenly found?
Yeah, you know, it was found in the National Archives, by a, very, very, savvy, investigator. His name is Les Kinney. He's a retired FBI agent, and he's been doing this for a long time when it comes to investigating the disappearance of Amelia Earhart. And he came across this photo in the National Archives. So it hadn't been recently declassified or anything like that. It was really sort of always there, but it just sort of was kind of looked over a lot. And he just kind of came across this photo. And when he saw the photo, he was just, you know, he was taken aback. And the more information he put into the, you know, digging for the photo, the more, I guess I could say, conclusive in his eyes that photo became. And then he, of course, he contacted the History Channel and contacted Morningstar Entertainment, who was already working on a documentary, and showed him this photo. And then they had the photo looked at by, you know, top forensic photographer analysts, you know, in the country, which we've also talked to, which will be on our, you know, they'll be on our podcast this season, upcoming season. And everybody said, look, this is, you know, they did forensic overlays, as you saw in the Lost Evidence Project and the documentary. And it just, everything checked out over a 98%. Again, there's that 90%. There's that 98% number again,
yeah.
98, 99. And, you know, you're having top experts basically tell you, yes, this photo is them. You know, this is, you found it. It's them. And now the Japanese capture, you know, hypothesis has its first piece of massive, you know, tangible evidence in their case. And it's not just eyewitness testimony. Now they have something to go on. So I think that's one of the reasons why they got so excited about it, was because they've been, you know, talking about this for so many decades, and now they have a piece of evidence that they can point to. And of course, we all know what the fallout was with that once that dropped and everything. So,
okay,
it's been kind of a roller coaster.
So, and I've asked you this before, but refresh us, our government, classified documents, do you think that there is, or do we know that there are many classified documents about Amelia Earhart that if they were opened, maybe would shed a lot of light on what happened?
You know, that's a good question. Yeah, and yes, we have talked about this in the past. We do know that there are documents. Now, what is contained within those documents, we do not know, of course. But we do know there are a lot of documents that are classified that are pertaining to the United, you know, that are pertaining to Amelia Earhart and that world flight. We don't know what, of course, is contained within, but we know they're there. We know that Les Kinney himself has filed for hundreds of Freedom of Information Act requests and been denied for every single one of them. So we do know that, I mean, there's physical, tangible evidence to support that, because he's got the requests, he's got the denials, and, you know, they're saying that they do have stuff. The National Archives does have stuff. I can tell you, as far as a personal thing, when it comes to us, we've reached out to a lot of different folks within the U.S. government, different branches of the government, different government offices. And most of the time I reach out to them, they do say, when we mention the name Amelia Earhart, and, you know, we mention, if you, it's kind of like taboo. If you mention the name Amelia Earhart, a conspiracy in one line, they seem to sort of say, well, we can't touch that. You know, we can't discuss that. We're not at liberty to. It's not, you know, they just kind of shut you down. They just say, no, we can't talk about that. And, you know, we can't, some of them came, but they won't even touch Earhart at all, period. They won't, regardless of, even if you start going out her impact and her legacy and all that stuff, they won't even acknowledge it, because they don't want to get into anywhere close into the disappearance or anything surrounding that. So, yes, to answer your question, there are definitely documents, there's definitely information out there, and it's definitely being denied to certain people when they apply for that information. But what's in it? Your guess is as good as mine.
All right, so I've got to ask you, have you taken my advice? Yeah, we talked about this last time, and I told you what to do, and I'm telling you, this is the best advice you're going to get, Chris.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying. What do you got to do?
I do. And as a matter of fact, we are actually working on that. We've been working on that for a little while since we last got on the show here with you. So, yes, we are working on it. We are taking steps. And we are trying to sort of run an assist, if that makes sense, to certain people.
Well, you've got to find the right people to get that in front of President Trump. But I'm telling you, if you don't have the people on the inside, you got to figure out how to get Fox News interested and get a piece on Amelia Earhart. I think... love or hate the president, that's up to everybody out there, but there's a lot of stuff in the air that is a distraction, and he likes to change the subject and change the story, and for goodness sakes, he's thinking about pardoning the governor of Illinois who's been in jail for 10 years. He will think about this, and especially if you get a fascinating story in front of him that he can read and say, well, what is, you know, he'll be curious, he'll want to know what the hell we know, and I think he's the type of guy who's like, let the people know what's going on. So I really hope you're able to get that in front of President Trump and see if he'll release things, because it'd be fascinating if you're able to get this thing solved, because the government knows what happened.
You have a good point. It's a very good point. And if I think if anybody's able to do it, it would obviously, if anybody curious to do it, it'd be him. He did release some documentation regarding the Kennedy stuff, so I mean he's kind of prone to having his interest piqued in doing that. So
we have
already taken action.
I don't want to muddy these waters, but especially if there's an FBI cover-up angle or something that makes somebody that he's upset with look bad, he's gonna like that. And so, I wish you all the best of luck, and I'm very curious to see what happens when this gentleman is presenting new evidence based on, you know, what they found when they were researching more about the photo. How can people find you and find more information, Chris?
So the best way to find us is chasingearhart.com. That's our website. We will be live streaming this event next weekend on social media, on Facebook and Twitter. So if you hit any one of our Facebook, our social media sites, which you can link to from our website, or just facebook.com/chasingearhart, or, twitter.com/chasingearhart, you can watch this discussion panel. It's the largest of its kind, and it's myself and 17 individuals, and we're going to be discussing everything from her impact and legacy to the disappearance and the varying hypotheses, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So hit our website. You'll see everything there, and season two of our podcast actually kicks off later tonight with Dave Horner, who is a Japanese capture enthusiast, and he wrote the Earhart Enigma. So we have some really interesting episodes coming up, and we have some really big names coming up this season. So we're excited about season two, and the documentary will drop next fall. So we're going 100 miles an hour until that's done.
So a trailer this week, will we find that on chasingearhart.com as well?
Yes. So after, it's going to have exclusivity to the event, but once the event is behind us, then the trailer will debut online, and I'll make sure that I shoot that over you guys, so you guys can share it if you like. It's going to show, of course, our first footage of our documentary and all of our interview footage, and I think people will be surprised. The trailer is unlike anything you've ever seen when it comes to an Earhart trailer, so it's going to be really kind of an interesting project, and I think it'll excite people again because we're tackling it in a different manner than everybody else does.
And then the documentary this fall or a year from this fall?
Next fall of 2019. We're still shooting. We still have about 40 experts we have to shoot for the documentary. We're going to have over 80 experts in our documentary all around the world. So we have a long way to go. We're a little over halfway done shooting, but we still have about a year of shooting still.
Very cool. All right, ChasingEarhart.com, our buddy Chris Williamson. We'll check in with you again soon.
All right, pleasure as always.
All right, thank you so much. Chris Williamson, again, ChasingEarhart.com.